This is BMO Smarter Investing for March 2024. Join top BMO economists Douglas Porter, Sal Guccieri, and Jennifer Lee for trends and forecasts across the economic landscape so you can make more thoughtful investment decisions.
Hello. With us today is Michael Gregory, Deputy Chief Economist, to discuss a recent note on the implications and risks of the November U.S. elections. Suffice it to say, given the widely different policies of the two leading nominees, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, a second term in office for either could have widely divergent impacts on the economy, especially if the president's party ends up controlling Congress. The outlook for fiscal policy, trade, regulation, and geopolitics could all change dramatically after November 5th.
Hello, Sal. Thank you very much for inviting me today on this podcast. I look forward to our discussion.
Michael, let's start with fiscal policy, which often has an outsized effect on the economy. How is it likely to differ under the two nominees, and what are some of the impacts?
Well, obviously, President Biden and the Democratic Party have a proclivity to spend lots and deal with any deficit implications by taxing even more. Whereas Mr. Trump and the Republican Party have a proclivity to want to cut taxes, and if there's any deficit issues, they tend to address those by trying to constrain spending. So potentially, depending on who wins, and as you said, Sal, depending whether or not the president's party also is able to control both bodies of Congress, that we could have some major shifts or differences in policy. But before I just give you an example of that, something to keep in mind, and this depends or is going to impact no matter who wins the election. In the first of those, we have an increasing cost of Medicare and Social Security that is beginning more and more and more to impact the government revenues. And over the next decade, that's going to be a major driver of big deficits, regardless of who wins. But more immediately is the issue of rising interest payments because of a big government debts and the rising interest payments on that debt. And to put that in perspective, we have interest payments this year are going to be coming in above $870 billion on the way to $1 trillion over the next couple of years. And again, to put that into even more perspective, this year, that's more than what the U.S. government pays on total defense. And next year, this interest payments are going to be more than what the U.S. government pays on non-defense discretionary spending. So again, no matter who wins, these are big sort of hurdles they'll have to face. But we do have a major hurdle facing the winner come November 5th, and it is a fiscal cliff. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, as the name suggests, did cut taxes, but a lot of those taxes, particularly on the personal and estate side, they expire at the end of 2025, and they go back to where they were before, as of January 1st, 2026. And that would lead, other things equal, to about a $290 billion cut in disposable income as those taxes go up, and about $200 billion of that is due to higher tax rates. So what that means is, when we turn on the lights on January 1st, 2026, and these higher tax rates kick in, and they can literally hit GDP growth, annualized GDP growth, by 4 percentage points or more. So that's a major problem for whoever wins. Now, this is where we begin to see a little bit of divergence in the policies. Mr. Trump and the Republicans say they want to make these tax cuts permanent, which is not the current baseline for the deficit. And if they did make them permanent, that would add more than $3 trillion to the accumulated deficit over the next decade, mostly because of lower taxes. But the Democrats and the President Biden, they would like to make these permanent, but only for those earning less than $400,000 a year. And in fact, they will pay for that by increasing taxes on corporations and the wealthy and hopefully make it deficit neutral. But they intend to go further than that, as evidenced by President Biden's proposed budget for next year, by raising corporate taxes even more and raising the taxes on the wealthy even more. For example, the corporate tax rate going up to 28% from its current 21%, a 25% tax on unrealized income of billionaires and actually raising the top tax bracket back for its current 37% to 39.6%, well ahead of the expiry of the tax cuts. So, and what that does is have a profile for the deficit that's actually lower by about $3 trillion over the next decade, largely on the back of higher taxes. So you have this diametric policies here, where in one case, you're going to get a higher deficit, presumably under a Trump administration because of lower taxes, and under a Biden administration, a next Biden administration, potentially a lower deficit profile because of higher taxes. So depending who wins and whether that party also commands control of Congress, we could have some very sharp divergence in policy. So yeah, I'll leave it at that for now. I'm sure we're going to be discussing this a bit further.
Yeah, that's a good description of the potential divergences we'll see on the fiscal side, Michael. And I mean, it's pretty clear. I think the clear message is that the budget deficit will be quite a bit larger under a Trump presidency than under a renewed Biden term. And I think some of the estimates out there, possibly we could see the deficit gap between the two on the order of $6 trillion. Now, I know that's all relative to the baseline outlooks, but that's, you know, that's a considerable amount of divergence in the budget deficit over a decade, but it amounts to almost 2% of GDP on an annual basis. So quite clearly, it does seem as if the fiscal policy will be more stimulative under a Trump presidency. Let's switch gears from domestic policies now to trade policies. And I can lead off here. We know that both Biden and Trump have one thing pretty much in common over trade, and that is they're both pretty wary of other countries gaining a perceived unfair advantage in trade to the detriment of American workers. So President Biden, during his first term, yes, he didn't really add any new tariffs, but neither did he repeal many of Trump's earlier measures. Moreover, he has taken more restrictive action against China, basically restricting its ability to purchase advanced AI chips from U.S. companies. So definitely, he's got a bit of a protectionist bent as well, but clearly not on the same order as Donald Trump. We know, given the so-called trade war that what was implemented during his first term, is in particular against China, we know that Trump is eager now to get kind of back in the ring on trade. He has proposed to slap a broad 10% tariff on all goods entering the country. He's also considering a duty of more than 60% on China's products going into the U.S., and possibly a penalty, a 100% penalty on vehicles produced in Mexico by Chinese companies if they dare to set up shop there. So pretty significant measures on the table there. Now, Congress, of course, might be able to limit some of these actions, but for the most part, the president has almost full discretion to impose tariffs on any country it deems to have a so-called unfair trade advantage against U.S. firms. So, under Trump's trade policies, it's quite possible these new tariffs could lift inflation a little bit, though there would be clearly some offset from a stronger U.S. dollar. If the U.S. as a country is buying fewer foreign products, that would put some downward pressure on their currencies and perhaps raise the dollar. So that would temper the inflationary impact. But the real harm, either through inflation or just on the economy, would inevitably come from retaliatory actions of trading partners, including some allies. If they take retaliatory actions and we see a series of escalating duties and trade restrictions, you know, these so-called tit-for-tat moves would ultimately impede trade flows, disrupt supply chains, and boost business costs, resulting in higher inflation and weaker global growth. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Michael, on the trade front.
No, I think you did that well. Let's put it this way. In his first term, Donald Trump called himself Tariff Man. And he believes in the power of tariffs. And I do think that is something to sort of keep in mind. And I would brace for more tariffs if he wins.
Yeah, and speaking of bracing, I guess Canada, Mexico might be a bit wary under a Trump presidency because, I mean, that probably there is a risk that a Trump administration could simply walk away from the current free trade agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. And certainly if there's any saber rattling over this free trade agreement, it would do significant harm to business investment, in particular in the two smaller nations. We know the goods trade surplus that Mexico and Canada run against the U.S. has widened since the trade deal took effect in 2020. More so for Mexico, and apart from China, Mexico does run the largest trade surplus in goods with the U.S. Canada is still significantly behind, but there would be a threat there. I mean, we know that each country does have the right to pull out of the USMCA after giving 6 months' notice, though it's pretty unclear whether a congressional approval would be required to do so. We also know that this agreement comes up for review. In a couple of years, each member at that time will need to decide whether to renew the agreement beyond the preset termination date of 2036. If any country decides not to renew it, well, again, it would have a negative impact on business investment in particular. So I don't know if you want to add to that.
Something to keep in mind, too, is there already are trade irritants building up between, obviously, the United States and Mexico, but even the United States and Canada. And the dairy lobby are being very vocal of the fact that the commitments that Canada made when the USMCA was first negotiated, they haven't lived up to in terms of the spirit of the new rules. And therefore, you know, that all become a lightning rod, as it was under the first Trump administration. Dairy became a lightning rod for that. Absolutely. Now, maybe deviate a little bit on another potential difference between the two administrations with respect to regulatory policy.
Yeah, sure, Michael.
Sure, yeah. Well, that's something that sort of keep in mind here is that where we potentially could see a major difference between a Trump victory and a Biden one is the role of regulation. As we've seen under the current presidency, regulation has increased. Regulation with respect to trying to increase competition, to prevent mergers and acquisitions and things like that. Whereas already from Mr. Trump's first administration, we do know that he takes a lighter hand, whether it is on the regulation of financial institutions or allowing mergers and acquisitions, or maybe allowing more investment in the energy space. And I think where that difference could actually come to a head is in a major policy that the Biden administration came out with towards the tail end of the first 2 years in office was the Inflation Reduction Act, which to this day is an odd name for that piece of legislation. But an important part of that was the government support through a whole suite of tax credits to try to stimulate investment in electric vehicles and other kind of clean energy technologies. And the moment this bill was passed strictly along party lines, it got into the crosshairs of the Republicans. And surely if they managed to win the clean sweep, not only the presidency and both the House and the Senate, we can see some changes there. Basically, those tax credits disappearing quite quickly. In fact, one of the reasons why the activity in that sector has been so strong from the get-go was the fear that if we get a change in government, that those tax credits could disappear. So you might as well take advantage of them right now. But even if we, as today, have a split Congress, a Trump presidency will still have a lot of leeway through executive authority to deal with, you know, how the tax credits are interpreted. Maybe you narrow the interpretation. Maybe you have the ability to rescind some of them. And I do think that that would be another major shift, a major change, depending who wins.
Good points, Michael. Yeah, and it's pretty clear under a Trump win, the financial and energy industries would likely benefit. In fact, he could even resurrect the Keystone XL pipeline, which would be a plus for Canada's energy industry. So a lot to consider on the regulatory front. And I guess on the geopolitical front as well, I think if regardless of who wins, you know, if either president or either nominee as president takes a more confrontational approach with China regarding trade or Taiwan, that, of course, would be something to monitor. Now, Trump has threatened to pull the U.S. out of NATO as well, or at least scale back funding. So we don't know whether that would embolden Russia to take more aggressive military action in Eastern Europe. That's hard to say, but again, something else to keep an eye on. So I guess in a way to wrap up how the economy might defer under the either nominee as president, I guess under a Biden victory, I think it would be safe to say we'd probably continue to see deficit spending, and that would support near-term growth, but we would probably get some partial offset from tougher regulations. Under a Trump White House, almost clearly we'll end up with a larger budget deficit, a lighter regulatory touch, which could both provide an extra boost to economic growth, with some offset, though, from increased trade protectionism. I think regardless of who wins, the risk for inflation and perhaps interest rates might tilt to the higher side, just given that both would probably run somewhat expansionary fiscal policies. But again, it really comes down to whether we see a still divided Congress that would certainly temper the budget shortfalls, though, as you mentioned, Michael, would have less influence on either trade or regulatory policies. Now, we haven't talked about the possible impact on the Fed. Michael, do you want to weigh in on that issue?
Sure thing. Well, of course, anything that adds to the inflationary pressures is going to make the Fed less inclined to want to cut interest rates. And let's put it this way. I mean, this seems to be the direction the Fed's going right now in their latest policy announcement. They still had 3 rate cuts by themselves sort of penciled in, although that could be scaled back to 2. But the idea here is that rate cuts are coming, but they're going to occur a lot more slowly than how quickly rate hikes occurred. And so the cuts are going to unfold very gradually. And if we get any indication at all that inflation is proving to be stubborn, whether it's because of still tight labor markets pumping up wages or because of tax cuts by the Republicans, it's helping to boost domestic spending, or extra spending by the government under the Democrats, that potentially is creating extra spending and extra pressure, or the fact that the Inflation Reduction Act, or rather the tax credits, which much to the chagrin of even the Democrats, they failed to put some caps on those credits. So they've just been growing like gangbusters, leading to, you know, more spending in the economy and pressures in the construction sector. So to the extent all of these things unfold, you're going to get a Fed that's going to be more reluctant to want to cut interest rates as aggressively. I don't think we're at the point where we're going to start to see rates reverse course and start to go up. We'll have to see a major inflation spike to see that. I don't think that's in the offing. But what we would see, it would sort of build this case of interest rates being higher for longer than would otherwise be the case.
Yeah, so good point that clearly the risk on the inflation front could tilt to the upside, especially under Trump's more pro-growth policies. And as well, let's not forget, I think there would just be an increase in uncertainty about monetary policy. We know that Chair Powell's job might be on the line. Trump appointed Powell in 2018, but says he won't reappoint him upon expiration of his term as chair in 2026. And we know while he was in office, Trump threatened to fire Powell. Though it's really unclear whether a president could actually do so, at least not without a reasonable cause. So some uncertainty about monetary policy is as well. Well, thank you, Michael, for the discussion. November 5th could well mark a sea change in U.S. policies, especially if the winner's party also takes control of Congress. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening to BMO Smarter Investing, a podcast brought to you by BMO Investor Line. We are here to empower Canadians to invest smarter. For more information on how you can start investing today, visit bmo.com/onlineinvesting. And be sure to subscribe to this show to get the latest episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.